Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
So it's not a sin in your church to have an abortion?
That's the kind of conversation we would have, finding out your story, where you're from. God's the judge. People have to live to their own conviction.
The science is clear. The Bible is clear. And if we're honest, our intuitions are clear. We know what we're killing. We're killing a human being.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Just in time. This is Wretched Radio. Found it. The piece of paper that I was looking for. Whew. A few days ago, since March 2018, online and retail sales of Bibles have been banned in China. Did you know that? And hymn books or other spiritual readings aren't allowed in churches unless sanctioned and published by the government. Found it. That is what is going on right now. With 21st century human beings, was just watching a video of Pastor Mike Fabara's Compass Bible Church in Orange County, California. It's a tough life there. You know what? Mm-hmm. You know what?
Yeah.
I don't want to be petty and vindictive, but it just seems to me when you get to live in such a lovely place, you deserve to pay those high taxes up there in Los Angeles.
So explain Minnesota.
Yeah, well, liberal politicians, that's why
you never mind.
Got what you've got right there. And Mike Fabares was preaching to his congregation, and he said, I actually expect there to be Christian persecution in America. Not, it looks like, hey, the signs are there. I expect this to happen. Now, is he a sage? Well, defined sage, he certainly doesn't know the future for certain, but he's a wise fellow, and the signs are there, and there is nothing different between the DNA of pagans in China and pagans in America, pagans in North Korea and pagans in America, pagans in Indonesia, all over the globe where Christians are getting shellacked. There's no reason to think that it cannot happen here. And the anger and the vitriol that we so often see sometimes in the political realm, for us to think that could not happen in the spiritual realm, we'd be kind of silly to not be prepared for it. Encourage you to read 1 Peter. It is a shocking book that helps to prepare us how to live in a rotten situation, which is God's modus operandi. It's also his mode of operation. God is far less concerned about where we live, the government structure, societal norms. Those things just seem to be of very little interest to him. The question is, how will we live in the zip code that we're in with the things that are going on? How will you work at a job with a rotten boss? How will you behave as the child of a parent who's a stinker? It does happen. That's what God is interested in, not overturning social structures, not starting revolutions, but behaving in a godly way where we are. That is what God peculiarly calls us to, so that people will see our behavior and get saved where we are. We're not revolutionaries. We're Christians. And might I just suggest that it is at this hour that I believe when we study what is going on in our culture, now is the time to be sharing the gospel more loudly than ever before. Okay, do you ever talk to a friend and right in the middle of the conversation, they pull out their cell phone and start looking for something? Don't you just hate it when people do that? All right, well, I'm doing that at the moment because I received an email from a buddy of mine. He's a very smart fellow. I don't know why he hangs around with me. He wrote, have you seen the new book, The Coddling of the American Mind by Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt? Don't know if I said that right. They rely on a lot of evolutionary explanations, but it's a very astute analysis of our culture, especially the iGen generation. Apparently, that is the generation that is into the iPhones. We've run out of letters. It's Gen X, Y, Z. So apparently, we're not going back to Gen A, because that would probably offend somebody, being first and all.
Yeah.
So the X generation? Who is the X generation,
by the way? They're mutants who love Stan Lee.
Basically born in the 70s.
Okay, so 70s right. generation. So
roughly.
It's older than. I have no idea what you're talking about. Who's Stan Lee
X-Men.
Anyway? Why doesn't he have a last name?
X-Men.
Huh? He sounds like
Stanley
an Edward
Lever.
To me. Whatever. So the X generation, the Y, this is the iGen generation, which isn't a great phrase. Nevertheless, the three untruths that our culture teaches kids today. See if this doesn't sound poignantly familiar. What doesn't kill you makes you weaker. If it's hard and it hurts, it's bad. That's not a Christian perspective. If it's hard and it hurts, God is doing something for me. I can look at pain. I can look at suffering, knowing that it has a purpose to conform me into the image of his son, which is the absolute best thing there is. And I can endure suffering joyfully. You know, this morning I was thinking, not to get distracted from my distraction here, at least I'm not going to another text, was thinking this morning about my thinking, the way that I live, what I do, and I know we live in an era, maybe mostly it's 21st century Western civilization, the individualism that we so love, and the whole idea of free will, and we've got to protect that at all costs, even if it besmirches God's actual, what he is like. His character and nature is impugned by this rabid defense of we've got to have entire free will. Doesn't matter if it makes God look like a sissy. We've got to have free will. That's the preeminent attribute that we must possess. By the way, I wonder if that would be such a big deal if we lived in feudal times, when we would have an earthly lord and you just did what you were told to do. I wonder how many Christians were going, well, what about my free will? It probably was less of an issue for them than it happens to be for us. Nevertheless, I couldn't help but think this whole idea to be my autonomous self and my rugged individualism. And if you've got God telling you what to do on everything, well, then you're like a puppet on a string. And I'm thinking to myself, then Lord, make me a puppet. I would rather be so fully controlled by him, even if it is totally overriding everything in me that we so esteem in 21st century Western civilization, because it's the better thing. Isn't it better to be a puppet on God's strings than to be detached from him and living in a way that brings me fulfillment? Give me a... What's the name of the guy who runs the puppets on the... A marionette? Is that the fellow? A marionette. He's the puppeteer, right?
No, the marionette is the puppet.
He's the doll. The puppeteer is the
marionetteer. Is the person who runs the puppeteer.
Puppeteer.
See, the little do you guys know. See, I'm...
Master of puppets.
Fine. The marionetteer.
Puppet master.
He's good. And I'd rather be dangling on his strings and not controlling my life. Because I've got to tell you something. I make a rotten god. And I would much rather be under control of the benevolent God who is. There's a purpose in suffering. There's a reason hard things happen. According to our iGen generation, what doesn't kill you makes you weaker. Number two, your emotions are a reliable source of evidence. So if it feels good, that's truth to me. And that's the mindset of our current generation. Number three, life is a question of us versus them. Isn't that the truth? Hence identity politics. It is this generation versus that generation. And right now the big thing is, okay, boomer, have you heard that one? All right, so Tony, give me some advice about something. The way that I'm dressed, the way that I'm behaving, what, just something, anything.
See, if you're wearing a big boy suit, you should really have the collar closed with your tie on. And
okay,
out
boomer.
Just a little and
Okay, Boomer.
Esiason?
See what I did right there? You just shut down the conversation because, well, you're just, okay, pontificator. Okay, supposed font of all knowledge who looks down on this generation. That is a generational mistake on both sides, if you don't mind me saying so. For the older generation to be looking down on this generation that is being taught these three worldviews that are so unbiblical and just, oh, the snowflakes, oh, the millennials, oh, that's a mistake. And it's also a mistake for them to be doing the okay boomer business because that's as derogatory and pejorative as, oh, those snowflakes, they just don't, they're all soft and melt. They can't take the heat. We can learn a little something on both ends of it, and we would do well to stop with the condescending attitudes on both sides, knowing that this is the generation, how they are struggling, the way that they are viewing the world, whilst there is an opportunity, if you don't mind me saying so, I believe the gospel of Jesus Christ, which even explains things like suffering, that there isn't we versus them, it is one in Christ. It is a message that could resonate more than it has, perhaps in decades in our country. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for joining us today. Glad you would spend part of it listening to Wretched Radio. A thank you to our gospel partners. I know we say that a lot, but maybe not enough. Our gospel partners make all of this possible. All of this includes our fabulous resources like Road Trip to Truth, coming very soon, a 26-episode video series hosted by John Favarez that traveled to secular college campuses to tackle the tough issues that millennials struggle with and share the gospel with them. See, we want to reach the millennial generation, your kids or grandkids, with the gospel. With Road Trip to Truth, you get to be a fly on the wall to help you understand how to share your faith with this truly lost, depressed, and anxious generation. Road Trip to Truth, coming to a wretched store near you soon. Made possible by our gospel partners. Would you join us as a gospel partner? Visit wretched.org/donate for details. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Tempted, but I'm not gonna do it.
Some churches in the rural areas in Zimbabwe, you get a church with about 200 members. You only find one person with one Bible.
So tempted to say, you know, for just the cost of a cup of coffee, but I'm not gonna do that, but we could change that statistic. There are churches all over the globe, 200 people attending a church with one Bible. $5 will purchase a new Bible for a believer. Bible League International, historically proficient, sound, reliable. Let's get some Bibles into the hands of believers so they don't have to be sharing paragraphs until the next service. Please support Bible League International, wretched.org/Bible.
There are certain things people love getting for Christmas. You know, like new toys, new socks, the newest iPhone. There are things Wretched would love for Christmas, too. Gospel partners. As this year is coming to a close, would you consider becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner? You see, thanks to our gospel partners, you can find full episodes of Wretched Radio and TV at the home of all things Wretched, wretched.org, among many other resources, for free. Without our gospel partners, there simply is no Wretched. So if you enjoy watching or listening to Wretched and want to continue to do so, would you please consider becoming a Wretched gospel partner? Every dollar you give will be faithfully stewarded. In fact, right now, 83% of every dollar goes directly towards ministry work. Get the details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner at wretched.org/donate. Visit wretched.org/donate.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who He is and what He has done. Jesus is called our sanctuary. Through Christ, we find refuge from God's justice and find a safe haven where we can enter into the presence of the Holy God.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
What you got there?
Paper of paper. Is what the next generation is missing. This is Wretched Radio. It appears that the younger generations, most likely than you and me, they're hurting, they're struggling, they have no reason to believe that there is purpose in life. They seem to be running out of hope, killing themselves at higher rates than anything in our recorded history for accounting for people who take their own lives. And I say, while it is tragic, whilst the society that we've loved to grow up in seems to be unraveling, is this an opportunity to be sharing the gospel with a world that is hurting? As always, we want to be careful. The gospel is Jesus died for sinners. The gospel is not Jesus died and you can be happy, you can be emotionally healthy, you can understand how reality works, you can have better relationships, you'll be in a family that cares for you. That's not the gospel. It's the benefits of the gospel, but that doesn't mean that we can't talk about the benefits to demonstrate how good Jesus is. Because remember, we're not trying to persuade people to a theology per se. We're not simply seeking to get people to say, all right, my new worldview is Jesus is the God-man, the second person of the Trinity who died for sinners. Check. That's not what we're trying to encourage. Having people write down a different philosophy as their way of viewing life, that's not Christianity. And just to be really, really careful with this and not to sound liberal, but Christianity isn't theology per se. Now, there's a fine line here because we don't understand God without theology. It's built right into the name theology. It's an understanding of God. But we're not simply trying to get people to sign off on a statement of faith. We want to present Jesus as the best thing in the universe. Don't you want him? Why wouldn't you want to be in a relationship with the altogether lovely one? That's what Christianity is about. It's not about mere correct thinking. It is about a person, the Lord Jesus Christ. And when we show people all of the things that Jesus provides for us in his death and resurrection, it makes him look better. Having said that, we don't want them to come seeking the fruit without the provider of the fruit. Because if they come seeking Jesus' gifts without seeking the giver, they will get neither. You feel the tension that we have. We want to present all of the wonderful things that are in Christ, but in such a way that they come seeking the Christ and not the things they get in him. Thomas Brooks, 1659, a reminder that the Puritans preached about Jesus in a wonderful, exalting way, not just the fire and brimstone business. And I can't help but think we would do well to start parroting them more. This is a world that is hurting. And too often these days, we try to water down everything about God. And hey, you know, we're all just messy live people. No, we want to be preaching clearly. It's a sin. We want to actually be finger pointing. Not just hand pointing. I was just told that in the military, they no longer point fingers because that apparently hurts people's feelings in the military. So now they use the whole hand. They reach it out as the hand and not a point. I say Christians point because it makes the message poignant. I don't know if those words are actually related, but it sounded kind of good. Do you remember the story? The pastor comes to the timber town, the lumber town, and he preaches his first sermon, "Thou shalt not steal." Everybody thinks it's a wonderful sermon. "Well done, Pastor," they say as they walk through the back door. "Wonderful to have you here. Terrific word." Which confused him because he knew that many people in that congregation were breaking the law. How? People would cut down trees way upriver. They would brand the end of them and then send them down to the river to have them greeted at the town. Some of the people in his congregation were meeting those logs halfway down the river, cutting off the end of the timber and then rebranding them with their seal and then sending down the river so that they could get the wood for themselves, even though they hadn't done the work to cut them down. In other words, they were stealing. So for his next sermon, he preached on "Thou shalt not rebrand thy neighbor's timber." What was that? Finger point. Not generalities. A finger point. "You're the man," said Nathan. And Nathan didn't tell the story of a man who had many sheep, but took his poor neighbor's only little beloved lamb to kill that little lamb that the poor man cherished for a banquet. Nathan did not approach David and say, "Somebody's the person. You're the man." And so we point with the finger, because we don't want to water down what sin is and how offensive it is to God. Having said that, we want to make sure that we exalt the goodness of God, the love of the Father demonstrated and revealed in the Son, and we want to proclaim both things intensely, passionately, as if we actually believe these things, both finger pointing and then pointing to the cross, to demonstrate that God died while we were yet sinning and demonstrated His love. Thomas Brooks, "What are your present afflictions and troubles compared to the torments of the damned, whose torments are without intermission, without mitigation, numberless, bottomless, remediless, and endless? They have weeping served for the first course, gnashing of teeth for the second course, the gnawing worm for the third course, and intolerant pain for the fourth course. Yet the pain of the body is least part of their pain. The very soul of sorrow and pain is the soul's sorrow and pain. The everlasting alienation from God is served for the fifth course." Ah, Christian, how can you seriously think on these things and not lay your hand upon your mouth? Even when you're under the greatest temporal sufferings, your sins have been far greater than many of those who are now in hell, and yet your great afflictions are but a flea bite compared to theirs. Therefore, hush your murmuring and be silent before the Lord. Your biggest problem has been solved because God loves you in Christ. And all of a sudden, I can deal with my challenges and my struggles because I have good theology. This is a world that doesn't have good theology, and they are hurting. And as the window appears to be shutting in Western civilization for Christians to freely practice freedom of religion, why aren't we sharing this news more? American millennials' mental and physical health is on the decline, and they're on track to die faster than Gen X. New report. American millennials are seeing their physical and mental health decline at a faster rate as they age than Gen X. This is according to Blue Cross Blue Shield. Without proper management or treatment, millennials could see a 40% uptick in mortality compared with Gen Xers of the same age. This is a generation that does not need to be mocked. This is a generation that is lost. They've been buying the lies of the world system that life, it's just you shouldn't be hurt by it. I'm not mocking the millennials. I'm mocking the people who teach this nonsense. We just need to fix the outside and everything on your inside is going to be fine because you're amazing and you're wonderful. I'm not mocking millennials. I'm mocking this worldview. It's nonsense. And they get hit by reality and they're hurting and they're confused and they are untethered and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And it appears to be affecting their physical health. Behavioral health is a key factor in the decline of millennials' health. The generation has seen rises in depression rates and deaths of despair, financial burdens leading them to kill themselves. The report attributed millennial health decline to both physical conditions such as hypertension and behavioral health, particularly rises in rates of depression, hyperactivity, ADHD, substance abuse. Depression and hyperactivity among American millennials increased 30% in the last 3 years. Major depression diagnoses were rising at faster rates for millennials and teens than they were for any other age group. There's been a worldview shift. We can explain this. They're operating under the wrong worldview. more millennials were dying deaths of despair or deaths related to drugs, alcohol, and suicide. Deaths have increased across all ages in the past 10 years, but they've increased the most in younger Americans, accounting for the deaths of about 36,000 American millennials in 2017. Deaths of despair. I'm just trying to think. Is there anything in the Bible that could help them with their despair? Is there anything about the Christian worldview that might raise somebody's spirits? Ah, we better just mock them and call them snowflakes and do funny memes about them. Or we can have the courage that it takes in our culture to open up and proclaim the goodness of God in Jesus Christ and point to the God of all hope. This is Wretched Radio.
Attributes of God. Psalm 115, verse 3 says that God does all that He pleases. God is sovereign over His whole creation. He has the right and the power to govern all things according to His will. Nothing occurs in your life that God, in His sovereignty, has not allowed. He is working all things for His glory and the good of those who love Him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
More paper wiggling.
Well, you got your choice this time. You've got, or this is Wretched Radio. Tony, I don't think you're going to like either one. Do you want this one or that one?
This one.
Then we'll go with that one. Lutheran pastor's wife, you know this isn't going to be good, don't you? Lutheran pastor's wife, all right, before I read this headline and Tony gets all consternated over the...
I'm not. I've already read this story.
Yeah.
They're
but
not
isn't,
Lutheran.
Isn't this a reminder? You point to me a story that violates my principle that whenever you see a child being abused because there is a parent encouraging them to think that they're the opposite gender than the way God made them, it's always the mom. There's a mom leading the charge. I have not seen one story to contradict that philosophy, that principle. Here we go. Lutheran pastor's wife rejoices that transgender daughter 12 just got, quote, life-affirming hormone-blocking implant. Life-affirming.
Life-affirming hormone-blocking
implant. Life-affirming. Yeah. It's a mom. So I'm reading this article in the Blase for no other reason than to find some way to take a poke at our very own in-house Lutheran, Tony. That's the only reason I'm reading it. When I get to this, according to this woman's website, she's an openly queer woman married to a Lutheran pastor and mom to three spirited children. Okay. All righty. There you go. Okay. And the kids suffer. Somebody sent me an article, sent to idea@wretched.org. They sent me an article that somebody, a spokesperson for the transgender community, they're very unhappy with the Ken doll. They're calling the Ken doll that is neither male nor female. So you can call her Ken, Kenneth, or Kendra, I guess. It's the gender neutral doll. Upset for two reasons. Number one, That's not the right term. They're not gender neutral. They're trans this or whatever their terminology is. So not happy about
gender
that.
Gender fluid.
Gender fluid. So it's not that they're genderless. And the second thing is anatomically, there's apparently no anatomy indicating anything on this Ken or Kendra doll. That's not making them happy because, you see, they do have those things and they want Ken to actually look more like that. So apparently, we're not woke enough yet at the Mattel plant to satisfy the demands of those folks.
Never will be.
And never will be. This is a tragic story from Austin, Texas. Just there's many perspectives on this. I grant you that it is grievous. It is, again, a society that is unraveling right before our very eyes. Children and women will inevitably be the ones to suffer the most, the firstest. And this is a reminder that we have a worldview that can be, rather than being the, what's the matter with you dum-dums? No, we have a worldview that's better than this. I think that's the way that we need to be presenting ourselves. Rather than as the Protestants, the protesters, we need to be the Protestant, the forth-tellers of truth. That it seems that, by the way, is what Protestant means. It's not that we're protesters, that we're just against, we're against the Roman Catholic Church, we're against all of their theologies that we believe are aberrant. No, that we're the proclaimers forth of a good message. And I wonder if we could use that adjustment as we hear these stories, instead of just going, ah, these people, these knuckleheads, ah, look at them, the perverts. How's about we go, we've got a message that's so much better than this. Austin, Texas, anything that comes out of Austin that's liberal shouldn't shock us. There is a sex education policy that includes instruction on sodomy and teaching on the use of prophylactic devices for elementary school kids. That's just great. The policy will provide graphic instruction on gender identity and mandated support of the LGBT movement. Students in grade school and middle school will also be taught how to get an abortion or obtain birth control pills without parental permission or consent. Is there anything in this story that should cause outrage? Yes. Is there anything in this story that should cause us grief? Yes. Is there anything in this story that should cause us to say, we gotta be proclaiming a better worldview, that there is something about keeping the innocence of children that is good and glorious, that we can learn how to treat children from a book that has demonstrated itself to be reliable, and that we have a better message? To be in alignment with God's reality is better than writing our own reality, which does not bring us to a happy destination. Aren't we seeing that with all of these statistics that we've already been talking about? People are depressed, they're suicidal, deaths of despair, unhappiness. You read about transgender people that they go through awful, awful, unthinkable procedures, and it doesn't make them happy. The destination is futility with a worldview that is detached from reality. Christian, we know reality. We know reality. What is reality? It is that which is in alignment with what we observe to be true. We know how it works. We can explain all of these things. And teaching kids in third grade about sodomy? Giving kids that are 12, what did she call it? Life-affirming, wrecking your body, whatever she called it, wherever that story went to. Really?
Hormone blockers.
Life-affirming hormone blockers. So let's get this straight. We've got to take medication to block what's naturally going on in somebody's body? Yeah, that sounds right. We should be grieved over this. Yes, there should be righteous indignation over this, but how's about we proclaim, let me teach you about sexuality. I'm going to give you a little birds and bees lecture, Bible style. Because it actually has birds and bees lessons in there, you know. Not in the way that we tend to think about them, but it does teach about sexuality. It does teach about intimacy. It does teach about gender issues. It does teach about our bodies and the way that God designed them. We've got a better message. The school district will also begin instructing students to no longer use words like mother or father. Gender stuff. The district's curriculum recommends integrating words like parents or guardians instead of mom or dad. Okay. Great. Changing words to conform to their worldview that isn't in alignment with reality. Here's the bottom line. It's not going to make them feel better. It's not going to help them sleep at night. It will not give them a peace that surpasses all understanding. What are we seeing? Romans 1, this effort to suppress the truth and unrighteousness. We'll change the name. Instead of being called a this, now we'll be called a that. Being called a sodomite is bad, so we'll change it to homosexual. You know, that's not so good, so we'll try same-sex attracted. Or we'll try gender fluid. Or we'll try whatever, to just something to make me feel better. I got to feel better about this, because they can't feel better about it. And we can explain that to them. Last night in my 82 hours of private quiet time. Okay. I have nobody to blame but myself. My glasses went a-wandering, and I'm the one who took them. I'm putting them in my collar. That's the word I'm looking for, to carry them around, and now they just disappear, and they end up in all the wrong places. So I'm reading 1 Thessalonians last night. Get to chapter 2. And I read about Paul and what he dealt with to get to the Thessalonians to preach to them. For you yourselves know, our coming to you was not in vain, but even after we had suffered, before we were spitefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we were bold in our God to speak to you the gospel of God in much conflict. For our exhortation did not come from error or uncleanness, nor was it in deceit. Paul was getting shellacked for preaching truth. Now, slightly different reasons, but nevertheless, he had to summon up courage to proclaim the gospel, and he did. And the church in Thessalonica, probably the best church that's spoken about in the New Testament. Because 2 Thessalonians is about, hey, you're doing really good, let's do even better, Thessalonians. What did it take for him to do that? He was bold. Why? Because they were getting beat up, they were getting imprisoned, whipped, stoned. Nevertheless, he was willing to preach the good news for their good. Christian, we're in 1 Thessalonians 2 right now. We've got a message of hope. The question is, will we have the courage? This is Wretched Radio. When you sponsor a Tomorrow Club for $30 per month in Eastern Europe, you are writing stories like this.
Vova and Maxim, one is 11 and another 13, they're brothers. Both of them smoke like crazy, so when they joined Tomorrow Club, they would just make noise and kick other kids around. That winter, the father left the whole family without wood for the furnace, so they could freeze to death, and without food. So the leaders came and actually brought the wood to the family and fixed the thing that they were broken in the home. So the boys saw what happened. They got saved, and the change in their attitude and behavior is just immense.
$30 per month. You'll be discipling 30 Eastern European kids in far-flung and very poor villages in Eastern Europe, and so much more. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Here at Wretched, we know you guys are already great at giving away Don't Stub Your Toe and What Time Is Purple. So, why not add Are You a Rotten Fish to your arsenal? Are You a Rotten Fish is a perfect booklet for anyone looking to truly understand what makes a false convert. Are You a Rotten Fish is a detailed treatment of true and false conversions. You know, the difference between wise and foolish virgins, wheat and tares, the difference between good and rotten fish. Give it away to college students as they head off to school, or to your youth group at church. Go to wretched.org/fish and get your copies now. Are You a Rotten Fish compares and contrasts the true gospel versus the false gospel in a short, thorough, punchy, yet loving way. Get your copies of Are You a Rotten Fish at wretched.org/fish. wretched.org/fish.
Well, Geneva was married, but in her 20s, she had a one-year-old daughter at home that would interfere with her plans to go back to school, and so she was hoping she wasn't pregnant, but she was. I asked her how she felt about her pregnancy. She said, I don't want it, and my husband doesn't want it. to agree to do an ultrasound, and she didn't want to take any pictures of the ultrasound, but she did look at it for a long time. And so we put it in the file, and then we started walking out of the clinic with her, and she turns to the nurse, and she says, "Do you have any referrals for medical providers?" And I said, yeah, we've got a good doctor. You can go see him. Well, she went to him, and she chose life.
Ultrasounds save lives. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org, providing free ultrasounds, and presenting the gospel to moms and dads, $28 per ultrasound. How many could you support each month? Please support Preborn at preborn.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 1273. Thomas Aquinas completes work on Summa Theologica, the theological masterpiece of the Middle Ages. Aquinas synthesized faith and reason, incorporating Aristotelian philosophy into his work, and provided a theological framework for Catholic doctrine. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Actually, I got nothing for you. This is Wretched Radio. As long as you've got your Bible open to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, might need to learn yet another message from Paul. How now shall we live in a culture that opposes Christ? How will you and I respond when persecution comes knock, knock, knocking on our doors or on our ceiling if they want you to stop preaching and go to jail? I think that was a Tony Orlando and Dawn song, if I'm not mistaken. Paul summoned up the courage anyway. We need to recognize, Paul had to overcome fear. Remember, he came to the Corinthians with fear, much trembling, no eloquency of speech. He would ask churches, pray for me that I might speak as I ought. We got to recognize it's scary to live in a culture that hates Christ. It's not wrong to recognize that. And it's not wrong to actually have those fears. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of humanity. Somebody's bearing down on you. No, I'm not going to have any emotions, because to demonstrate fear would demonstrate weakness. No, it demonstrates awareness. It can be cowardly, of course, but Paul dealt with these issues too, and that's why in 1 Thessalonians he says, look, we were suffering. We were spitefully treated at Philippi. Wait a second, I want to look at my little study note here if I can see it. Paul and Silas have been brutalized in Philippi before coming to Thessalonica. I'm reading my footnote. They suffered physically when beaten, that'd be your Acts 16:22, and incarcerated, Acts 16:24. They were arrogantly mistreated with false accusations and illegally punished in spite of their Roman citizenship. Much conflict. Like their treatment in Philippi, Paul's team was falsely accused of civil treason in Thessalonica and suffered physical intimidation. Okay, we're not even close to that yet. Could, probably will, but Paul had to summon up the courage. By the way, if you thought those footnotes were interesting, the challenge still stands. Get yourself a MacArthur Study Bible, read the entire New Testament, one book at a time, in any order, at your own pace, but read every single footnote as you go. I promise you, when you are done, you will have more theological knowledge than most pastors in this country. Dare ya? Paul had to overcome that, but what did he do? As you know, we were bold in our God to speak to you the gospel of God in much conflict. So it was still not easy. But then it goes on. But as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, there's our key, even so we speak. There it is. There it is. God has given you and me clay pots. Gorgeous words to proclaim. That is what we get to carry. The words of God. Messengers risk their lives to bring a letter from the king, a word from the king to a person, to a people, or to a foreign dignitary. And what an honor. That's an earthly king. And nothing, honey. That's a Cheerios reference. because I've got Cheerios commercials from the 70s memorized more than I can memorize my Bible. It ain't nothing, honey. That's nothing. In service of the king? That, who cares about being a representative for an earthly dignitary who dies? We get to carry God's message. We're entrusted with that. Not as pleasing men, but God. For neither at any time did we use flattering words, so they didn't water it down. They pointed a finger. They were willing to go, you are the man. We didn't use flattering words, all sensitive, because we're just such a messy people in a messy world. And aren't you messy? I know I'm messy. No, didn't use flattering words. They called sin, sin. As you know, nor a cloak of covetousness. Nor for a cloak of covetousness. In other words, they didn't act and preach in a certain way because all they wanted was their stuff. All they wanted was their money. Another sign of a false teacher. Covetousness is underneath it. They want fame and power. They want money, or they want your body. Three marks of a false teacher. Paul said, no, 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 we weren't that way. God is witness. Nor did we seek glory from men. Saw a video last night, rather troubling. And this is an individual who's a high-profile preacher who doesn't preach the word very much. Quite honestly, appears to be entertaining the masses. Extremely popular. And this very popular evangelical teacher said, finished doing a big conference and was so wound up, I couldn't go to sleep. I sent a text to Dr. Steve Lawson, and I said, Steve, he's the professor of homiletics at Masters University. He teaches preaching, One Passion Ministries. Outstanding. If you don't listen to his Thursday morning Bible study, oh, man, Silla, you're missing the boat. It's magnificent. Hearing his preaching, it's just different. He'll point his finger. He actually points his finger, and he proclaims the truth. And I said, how do you feel after you're done preaching? Because I always need to nap. I finish preaching. It is seriously, it is like I have been wrung out with a rag. Like I got a nap. And he said, I feel like the walking dead when I'm done. Contrasted to this popular preacher who was so energized that sleep was elusive. Elvis used to have a hard time sleeping because when the spotlight was turned off and he'd received all that adulation and attention and praise, he was buzzed because the focus was on him. A preacher whose focus is on Christ is drained and exhausted and tired. We didn't seek glory from men. That's not what we're looking for as preachers. Not applause. Not to be in the spotlight. Not to be laughed at, whatever it is. And when you're preaching like that, you just need more. Because it's about you. Paul said it wasn't about him. We didn't seek glory from men, either from you or from others, when we might have made demands as apostles of Christ. But this is fascinating. So you remember a few verses earlier, he's saying, we were really bold. We had to have courage to come and preach to you. In other words, Paul played the man. Wasn't a sissy boy. But now we see something interesting. But we were gentle among you, just as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. Wait a second. I thought you said he was a strong, courageous man. Now it's saying that he was like a nursing mother. Which is it? Yep. Boldness and strength doesn't mean you're a tough guy. It means that you overcome your fears and do what God has commanded you to do. But we do it lovingly because we care. Like even when you're finger pointing, it's from a loving perspective, not condescending, not arrogant. Verse 8. Like a mother cherishes her own children, so affectionately longing for you. We were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but our own lives, because you'd become dear to us. A shepherd gives his life. A shepherd smells like the sheep. A shepherd isn't highfalutin, just hobnobbing with a certain select group of people in the church, isn't always running off to conferences and hobnobbing with the high profiles, and has little to do with the sheep that are in his charge. It's not Paul. We gave our lives for you because you've become dear to us. You remember, brethren, our labor and toil for laboring night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you. We preach to you the gospel of God. That's a model for us. We've got a world. They're hurting and they're lost. Fewer Americans convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt that God exists. This is Romans 1. This is when this goes, everything goes. When you suppress the knowledge of God, which is the most obvious thing that there is to identify on the planet. The sky is blue. That's not that's harder than realizing God exists. You suppress that the sky is blue. That's easy compared to saying God doesn't exist, because you're suppressing the most obvious thing. Nearly 80% of Americans were convinced just over a decade ago God exists. Now it's only 64% of Americans today who are strongly persuaded in their belief of God. On it goes. Pew Research, 65% of Americans now identify as Christian. Significant growth in the unaffiliated, the nuns. And it's young people. This is why we're trying to reach them with Road Trip to Truth. But nevertheless, we live in a culture that is increasingly saying not interested. And I wonder if it's because they've never heard how magnificent God is when they've been able to see how good He is in the person of Jesus Christ. This is our time. This is isn't a time to cower. This isn't a time to revolt and be a revolutionary. This is a time to be a Christian and proclaim the excellencies of Christ. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.